I'll tell you, when I was driving up here, I thought I was going to be alone here. The day is so gorgeous. And we've been yearning for it for so long. I was thinking with that beautiful song, God Knows, there's a story of the mullah. This is usually stories told by my colleague, Jamal Rahman. The mullah, of course, is this sage fool who was prevailed upon by the local mosque to come to speak. He had really kind of been reluctant to do so. And they finally prevailed upon him, and he came to speak, and he stood up and he said, "Do you know what I'm going to talk about?" And they said, "No." And he said, "Well, what's the sense of me talking?" And he walked out. So they still wanted him to speak, and they figured out, okay, now we know what's required. So they finally prevailed on him to come speak again. And he stood up and, as predicted, said, "Do you know what I'm going to talk about?" And they all said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, what's the sense of talking?" And he left. So they had to think about this, you know, and try to figure out, and they finally did, and they finally got him back. And he stood up and he said, "Do you know what I'm going to talk about?" And half of the people said yes, and half of the people said no, and he said, "Good, you tell them." I just thought of that with God Knows, you know. What's the sense of talking? That actually, I actually was going to start with a story, but that wasn't it. I've been doing a lot of work with the Interfaith Amigos, and somebody, actually a couple people referenced them as we were going around hugging. You're a friendly group. And in our work together, I'm constantly searching for stories about a pastor, a rabbi, and an imam. And I want to share my favorite one, my current favorite. The rabbi, the pastor, and the imam are talking, and they start talking about what they hope people will say after they die. And the pastor's, in response to the question, "What do you hope people will say after you die?" he says, "Well, I hope that they will talk about how clear I was about Jesus' message of love and compassion and how I lived my life supporting that and supporting others." And they turn to the imam and they say, "Well, what do you want others to say when you die?" And he says, "Well, I want them to say that he was a follower of the Quran, and he brought the message, the beauty of Islam to his people and to many people, and he lived according to those ethical and moral and spiritual principles." And they turned to the rabbi and they said, "Rabbi, what do you hope people will say when you die?" And he said, "Look, he's still breathing." You know, we live in strange times. We have these pockets of peace and connection, you know, that this place represents, and so many like this. We have relationships of deep an abiding meaning. And we have the world. And we have a deepening polarization. And we have anxieties that many of us have not seen in our lifetimes. And many of us have lived long enough to have seen a lot of anxieties, dealing with a lot of traumas. And what we seek in many ways is some kind of clarity. We want to know what's what. In Jewish tradition, the Torah, which is the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, that literature is read through every year. So every week has a section of the Torah. The Torah originally was split into different sections. Chapters and verses actually were added by the early church. And the particular passage that we just completed was the end of the book of Leviticus. I'm sure all of you are familiar with the book of Leviticus. You often amuse yourselves by reading about how to make sacrifices and all the priestly garments, what animals to bring. Yeah. I know. It's one of the things you do often. But at the end of the book of Leviticus, there's this remarkable support for clarity. And basically the clarity is, if you guys will observe these commandments, everything will be fine. And if you don't observe these commandments, everything will be terrible. Clear. I mean, there's a part of us that would really like clarity like that. If we just do the things we think are right, or the things somebody tells us are right, everything will go great in our lives. And the things that will go great are really spelled out with such great detail. I mean, not only will we flourish, not only will we be healthy, but the rains will come at the proper time, the sun will shine at the proper time, the crops will grow at the proper time. Our animals will be healthy. Everybody will be healthy. We'll be powerful. Nobody will attack us. We won't have to be afraid of anything. We'll be able to sleep out in the outside without any fear. Oh, all you got to do is follow the command. But if you don't, oh boy, everything's going to be absolutely terrible. It's going to be awful. And the string of awfulness just gets worse and worse and worse. I don't even want to tell you about them, because it'll just depress you. But you know what? It never kind of worked that way. And it also set up a system where if things go bad, it must be our fault because we weren't observing the things we should have observed. We do that sometimes even in consciousness work, you know, where we think if we get ill or if things don't go well, it must be our fault. We must not be doing it right. It's called blaming the victim. It's a terrible, terrible violence. It's a terrible violence because there's something in the setup of rewards and punishments that keeps us stuck. And the basic problem is something that we carry around with us always. The basic problem is something that we hold so dear and listen to so completely. It's called our mind. I hope you don't mind my saying that. Because the mind, which is the voice of our ego, the voice of our separate self, the mind only knows through contrast. The mind knows reward because it knows punishment. Without punishment, without that contrast, the mind would not know reward. In fact, the mind only knows up because it knows down. The mind only knows hard because it knows soft. The mind only knows sweet because it knows bitter. And according to the mind, if everything went well in our lives, we'd never know it. That's the mind. It's not our fault. It's not our fault. That's simply the way the mind works. So we go through this magnificent thing where we think all we got to do is control our minds. Oh. I've given that up. That's like sitting in meditation and wondering what thought will the mind produce first and realizing you don't have any control over that. It's like even right now, there's this voice going on inside each of our heads. And if you pay attention, particularly when we relax a little bit, and we start listening to this conversation we're having with ourselves, it's like each of us has been appointed by the universe to look out at others and at everything that's going on, and we are the ones the universe is trusting to go, this is good, this is not good. And the universe goes, ah, you're doing your job. Can't help it. This is better than that. This is taller than that. This is shorter than that. This is younger than that. This is older than that. This is warmer than that. This is cooler than that. Can you hear it? I mean, it's one thing to be controlled by it. It's another thing to be amused by it. It's another thing to stop being entrapped by it. So what the mind would like is a kind of certainty that is not available. The mind would like a kind of peace that the mind can't know. The mind would like a kind of love that the mind can't know. What a bummer. The mind would like what the whole of our ego would like more than anything else. If we really look into it, what we would like more than anything else is to be accepted unconditionally, exactly as we are right now. What we would like more than anything else is to be loved exactly as we are right now. And the ego mind goes, well, I could accept myself as soon as I lose weight, gain weight, exercise. As soon as I get that degree, as soon as I'm in a relation, as soon as I get that job, as soon as I have so much money, as soon as I, if only. Oh. So the mind sets up this system of reward and punishment because it can understand that, and we deal with the mind like we deal with children. Isn't that how we do with children? They're too young to reason with, so we say, do this and you'll get a reward, and do that and you'll get punished. You know, it's the first thing that we tend to do until a higher kind of reason can come. So what is this business about reward and punishment if you follow the commandments or if you don't follow the commandments? And I'll tell you, I think it has more meaning than it usually is seen to have, because the levels on which it speaks get confused. Obedience and rebellion, following what we're told and not, that's on the ego level. Transcending that level, obedience and rebellion looks like conscious and unconscious. It looks like awake and asleep. And the whole thing starts changing. Because for the ego to understand anything as positive, it has to be out there. For the greater consciousness to understand anything as positive, it has to be in here. The place to find that peace we seek and the place to find that love we seek can't be in the out here. It can't be in the mind until we're willing to love the mind, until we're willing to love the out here just as it is right now. In Jewish tradition, it's called Shabbat. You know the word Shabbat? Sabbath. The word Sabbath is like a transliteration from the Hebrew word Shabbat. It was an innovation of ancient Jewish tradition. And the whole idea of Shabbat is a celebration of creation. A celebration of creation. That's what it originally was in the myth in the book of Genesis. On the seventh day, celebration. It's very good. And this is so challenging for the mind. Things are not that good. Look at how things are. Shabbat is not necessarily a day of the week anymore, then it's a space in consciousness that can awaken at any given moment. And the cutting through of the trap of rewards and punishments, the cutting through of the stuckness in the ego mind is called Shabbat. It's a moment of yesness, and it can come at any time. Oh, it can come right now. Just a resounding awareness, awakening behind the mind that goes yes. Yes to the drip in the nose. Oh, it's so incredible to be here in a body. I don't know how you guys are, but it gets extremely challenging to look in the mirror these days and go, what exactly happened? But it's a wonderful thing to look in a mirror and to start being aware that the changes are happening on the outside, but not on the inside. The one who's looking at my image in the mirror, well, that one actually doesn't have gray hair. Actually, that one doesn't quite have a face. Actually, that one doesn't have an age. Oh. That one knows that one knows what the mind can't know. That one knows Shabbat. That one knows the moment of yesness that cuts through, that knows peace and knows love and celebrates it right now and right here. It's the only time there is. So it just so happens that part of the consequences of some of the interfaith work that I've done in the past many years has been a renewed interest in the spiritual teachings of Jesus. We kind of have two Jesuses. We have this Jesus who was Jewish, and we have this Jesus, well, he wasn't exactly Christian. Listen, I've spoken at churches where I've said to people, do you know what religion Jesus was? And you have people go, wasn't he Christian? Any rate, for those of you who are aware, several times in the Christian Bible, Jesus is asked, what's the most important teaching in Torah? And the two things he references are the same things that many of the other great spiritual teachers in Judaism referenced. One is from the book of Deuteronomy, V'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, you shall love the Eternal One, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your moreness. And the other one's from the book of Leviticus, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And those are interesting commandments. Those are the commandments I think of when I think of reward and punishment, deep reward and punishment. Those are the verses I think of when I think of conscious and unconscious, awake and asleep. One of the commentators asks, how can love be commanded? How do you command somebody to love? I mean, think about it. We have relationships, we experience love, we experience connection, but if somebody says, love this person, it doesn't work so well for the mind. It certainly doesn't work so well with the ego. So the commentators say, it's actually not a command, it's a description. And the Hebrew can be read either way. The soul's natural inclination, the soul's natural tendency, the soul's natural operation is to love. And when we get out of the way and allow that, it happens. The essential commandment for a life of greater peace and a life of greater joy and a life of greater love is simply to start with allowing that love to pour through. And meeting the resistance of the ego that looks at a political situation, that looks at a world situation, that looks at a personal situation and says, I can't love that. And so you gotta. Because as long as you resist it, you stay stuck in it. The ego thinks that if I accept it, it'll never change, and it's exactly the opposite. If I don't accept it, it'll never change. Oh. So I invite you now to just take a few moments and get as comfortable as you can. It's really a process of remembering. It's a process of remembering the who that awakens when you look at your image in the mirror. It's a process of remembering the who that awakens behind the mind, behind the conversations of the mind. It's really a matter of remembering to allow yourself to appreciate what it's like in this moment to be in the body. How it is to have incarnated. Oh, to be able to see and to hear and to touch, to feel, to smell and to taste. To connect, to touch. What gifts. But in this moment of appreciation, to allow ourselves to fall back, to move behind the body, to hear that deeper awareness that says, I have a body, but I am more than the body. And to notice the meanderings of the mind, the judgments of the mind, without trying to change anything and simply allow it to be as it is, to move behind it to that space of yes. So grateful to have a mind. To have a mind that helps me drive on the freeway. To have a mind that helps me negotiate the material world. But on such a deeper level, to remember not to ask the mind what it can't do. To appreciate the mind for what it is. And in these moments, to allow ourselves to fall into the embrace of a deeper awareness, a deeper consciousness, a more inclusive space. And in that space, a kind of acceptance and a kind of love. Love that holds the mind and says, you're exactly as you're supposed to be. Right now. A kind of acceptance that holds the body and just says, I love you as you are right now. A kind of deep acceptance that translates into words like, I'm exactly where I want to be. I'm doing exactly what I want to be doing. I'm with exactly the people I want to be with. I am exactly the person I want to be. Right now, right here. Awakening to a kind of unconditional acceptance, an unconditional love. From which, from whom flow the deepest rewards, the deepest blessings, always. A blessing of yes that allows evolution to unfold. And taking a gentle breath and allowing that acceptance to flow through every cell and every level of your being. Taking a gentle breath and allowing that love to permeate the space we share, that we might walk that acceptance and walk that love into a world so in need, that we might support the kind of evolution, the kind of growing that needs to be, that we might celebrate solutions rather than problems, that we might celebrate each other and ourselves. Taking a gentle breath, allowing your eyes to open. And being in the wonder of this now.